All right, John chapter 15. In case you're wondering, during that song, when people's young voices started going, hey, 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 they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to do that. The adults are supposed to catch on to it and also do it. So we'll try it again next time as far as the catching on part. But it's been a good summer here at Living Hope so far. God's done some really beautiful things. We are halfway through our summer community groups, which is Wednesday nights here at the church. We're studying through the humanity of Jesus a little bit and kind of how his human experiences impact the things that we are going through. And so I'd encourage you to be here next two Wednesdays as we get into smaller groups and kind of work through some of those things. Next Sunday, we don't have youth or kids group for the next three Sundays, giving the teams a break. But during that 9:15 hour next Sunday in the fellowship hall, we'll have a little brunch in honor of Haley Miller. It'll be her last official staff Sunday here. And I told the parents this earlier. I was like, we're not going to like wave as the U-Haul drives away. It won't be like the last time you'll ever see her in history or anything like that. But it'll be a time for us to kind of gather in a fun kind of way before the service next week. So we'll send out some info about that as well. So it's an active time right now. And if you were at groups this past Wednesday, then you know that we're talking today about friendship and how Jesus experienced that on the earth. And here's one of the things about friendship that I have learned, as I'm sure you have as well, is that friendships can be a source of incredible joy, right? Like deep awesomeness. They can also be a time of significant pain, right? It can be a place where it hurts a little bit more sometimes, and when friendships kind of are difficult. And it's one of the things that I think just needs to be maybe said more often among, especially in like the adult world, but also to kind of get young people ready for this, that friendships get harder the older you get, right? Like your friendship your friendships are going to go through all kinds of things, and it's just a little bit harder based on a number of different factors. So one of them is going to be age. Like what you have to put into a friendship when you are 10 is very different than what you put into a friendship when you're 20, and very different when you're 30 and 40. With almost like with each of those different seasons of life, the older you get, it's harder for some reason. And there's no need to belittle that point. I think everyone's like, yeah, very different at 10 than at 20. And then from there, it just kind of continues to morph and maybe get a little bit harder. Another thing that's difficult is just simple location, right? Like our world really moves a lot more than we used to. And so it's one thing, a lot of people will point to their 20s when there's a lot of people piled up in apartments a lot. Like it's just so much easier when you live with your friends. And then as you get older, people start to move. People move away to a different city. They may take a job somewhere else. They may live close to you, but then they decide to move to the burbs, or they may decide to move to another place for this reason or this reason or this reason. And it's your location's kind of just shotgun out. And that makes it hard, right? So if your very closest friend, if you live in Prairieville and your closest friend lives in Central, that ain't no quick way to get there, you know? Location has something to do with it, especially in a city, you know, like ours. Another factor can be like married or unmarried. That is a lot of what happens in that like 20s and 30s is people start to get married, and some people get married and some people don't, and some get married really early and some get married later. And there's like, it just kind of affects friendships a little bit, especially if one of your friends marries someone that you don't like very much. That has not happened here, of course, never. Also in the mix is kids. And so when people start having kids, it sort of changes things. You're a lot less available when you have a newborn, those kinds of things. Or maybe you have some kids and they get to where they're a little more self-sufficient, but your closest friends, they have little bitty kids, or they don't have kids at all. And it just kind of gets strange. It's hard to be friends in those kinds of situations for sure. And then you're like, a lot of times those friendships are based on stuff you have in common, like a hobby, or maybe like your kids' activities, you know, or maybe church, or maybe just different things. And all those things are moving targets, right? Like people change churches, people's kids go through different stages of, like, you may have two friends, they have kids, and one kid loves sports a lot, and the other kid just wants to like paint and draw and do all the art stuff, and maybe that changes friendship dynamics sometimes, or like how the kids hang out with each other if they feel like they have things in common. And when all those things are happening and it's constantly moving and morphing and changing between our ages and our locations and our married, unmarried, kids or not kids, young kids, older kids, like there's so many different moving parts. Their hobbies change, churches change. It's just difficult. Like you have to work harder and differently. And sometimes that is easy to navigate. But for most adults, they will, in their most honest place, they'll say, yeah, friendships are hard. Friendships are very hard. Then you bring in social media, which makes a lot of things harder, which I think one day we're going to look back and be like, that really messed us up a lot. Social media gives you all these things to compare to, right? Social media shows you the things that maybe you weren't invited on, which is difficult for friendships. Social media can just really mess with us in regard to friendships, because sometimes it makes you feel very left out or very forgotten, or this and this and this and this. And then, of course, COVID kind of rewired all of our brains socially. I've read some really interesting explanations of what they think it did to us up here in our minds. But it changed all of our social patterns so much. I don't know that we're back to normal at all. So we have all those things going on. Plus, let's be honest, we're all a little bit insecure, or a lot of bit insecure. And we're afraid that we are actually alone, like that no one is connected to us, no one really gets us, those kind of things, or that we might end up alone. And so all these things are working against us, and our world has given us certain patterns and expectations of friendships. And the thing is, when all those things are moving around inside of us and outside of us, the worldly patterns of friendship they're going to not be met. Like we're going to come up short. And what's really weird is that we live in a world that, for the most part, we're surrounded by people, and yet sociologists and psychologists and counselors would vouch, and I would say pastors too, we're surrounded by people, but we're more lonely than we've ever been. That's a hard place to be. It's not a fun topic to bring up. It's not something that you want to even talk to your own friends about, as you're like sitting around the dinner table and be like, well, I actually feel like you guys are not my friends. You know, that's not the place to bring that up. I'm not trying to get you to do that, by the way. But I do think that it's something that we need to be talking about more, because it's really not a lack of options necessarily. It's really more a matter of the fact that our connections are often ineffective and insufficient. And I would argue that maybe we're using the wrong metrics for friendship. I think that we are using patterns that our broken world has given us and setting expectations for friendship that maybe are not even connected to what's true and real about how God built us. I was telling the group I was in on Wednesday night, like I started college when the TV show Friends came out. And so I can remember we had like a campus ministry thing on Thursday nights. And so someone would like program the VCR, if you could figure out how to do that, and would record it on a tape. And we would all pile up at someone's apartment that night and watch what happened on Friends. And I think that somewhere in me, and maybe a lot of us that come from that era, as a college freshman, I'm watching these people that are supposedly in their like mid to late 20s. And I'm like, oh, that's what my next stage of life is going to be like. not really maybe aware of the fact that this is a TV show that's created to do certain things, just thinking like, oh, that's what young adulthood is like. It's kind of like college. You live close to each other, you hang out together, your group gets a little bit smaller, but you become tighter, and you just sort of like venture through life together. And then you get into your 20s and you're like, oh wait, it's nothing like that. And my expectations are maybe met in some ways, but not met in other ways. And I felt like no one prepared me for the fact that most of your friends are going to move away. You know? Most of your life demographics are going to change, and all the details are going to change, and it's going to become harder to be friends the way that you were in college with that kind of like that sort of your young 20s. Make it's sort of like the bar that is set. I just wasn't ready for it. But the older I get, I'm like, oh, that's a false view of friendship. And so when we think about Jesus as a human walking the earth, Jesus, he did the things that we do. And so today, I want to talk about Jesus as a friend. So Jesus the friend, that's what we're doing. He had relationships. He had friendships. He had a family, which we'll talk about next week. He had a job, which I talked about last week. Looking at, like, he went through, like, real things. And so if Jesus is the expert on all things, which he is, and he has all this experience, not only during his 33 or so years on the earth, but also as our intercessor, he's been walking people through friendship for a long time. And so what we need to do is really care about what he has to say about it, because it absolutely makes a difference. It absolutely makes a difference. And so what I don't want to do is get us to like trash our friendships. What I want us to do is to recognize maybe there are some patterns of the one who created friendship has put into our lives that maybe are in place, maybe our rubric needs to be a little bit different. So when I look in John 15, which is typically a passage that we look at to understand, it's the Thursday night of Holy Week. It's the night he's arrested. It's the same night as the Lord's Supper. It's the same night as Gethsemane. It's all that stuff. And Jesus in John 13 through 17 is giving this incredible teaching to his disciples. And this particular paragraph, we often look at it as being about his sacrificial death on the cross and or the mission of the church. And it is absolutely about those things. But I think if we look at it, I mean, he uses the word friend three times in this little paragraph, that maybe this is also a friendship passage. So it will not be the normal way that we unpack these verses, and I don't think I'm being heretical in doing that. I just want to acknowledge the primary things, but also this may be a little bit different, but maybe there's something to be said for it. So let me read it. 12 through 17, John 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I've called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you so that you will love one another. So verse 12, this is the new commandment that he gives to us. He says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And so on Holy Week, on Thursday night, we have a service that's built around this commandment. This is the commandment to love is not new. As I have loved you. And if we think about it through the lens of friendship, let me borrow Jesus' formula. You know, there's like as he's teaching, he'll say, you've been told this, but what I tell you is this. Well, what if I borrow that for a second? And so you have been told that your friends are the ones you hang out with on a weekend. But what Jesus tells us here is that your friends are the ones who love you like he loves you. Your friends are the ones that you love them like Jesus loves them. that maybe it's not built around social rhythms as much as it is around love and his love. So I think it's a very important distinction. So what are some examples of as I have loved you that we see as far as Jesus to his friends? One of the stories we looked at in groups this past week involves three of Jesus's friends. Now we know basically from a friendship standpoint, you can narrow it down to the 12 disciples and Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, who are three siblings. That's kind of what the scriptures tell us. I bet Jesus had more friends than that, but those are the ones that we know about in the Bible. And we walk through the story where Jesus gets word that Lazarus is ill. Jesus waits 2 days and then travels to go see his sick friend. When he gets there, and they say that Lazarus has actually died and that he's been buried for 4 days. And so he's walking up to the village. Martha comes out to greet him. Mary stays inside the house. So you have these two sisters. We know another story about them from Luke chapter 10. We know that they have very different personalities. And if you read through the interaction of how Jesus is a friend to each of them, they both come out and Martha comes out first, then Mary later, but they both say the same thing. They both look at him and they say, if you had been here, our brother would not have died. And right there, you see a little bit of friendship, right? You ever had your friends blame you for something? You ever had your friends express like their disappointment like in something that you have done or not done? Have you ever blamed your friends? Have they ever let you down? Have you ever had to communicate that with your friends? I think that's a friendship dynamic that is very typical and not a bad thing, even though it's not our favorite. There are just going to be times when our brokenness collides and we let each other down. And so Jesus is not an exception to that. He didn't do anything wrong here, but that's how each of them felt in the moment, and they were good enough friends of him to express it. And so he loves each of them in a very specific way, and it's reflective of the fact that he knows them. So with Martha, we know from Luke 10 that Martha is like very task-oriented, and she is anxious and troubled, is what Jesus says. So she's kind of like, I don't want to overly type people, but maybe type A in terms of like, I need to get some things done. She's hosting this event, those kinds of things. And maybe she's a little bit heightened in that way. And so she comes out and she says, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. And Jesus knows that what she needs right now is information, basically. So his response to her is enters into this kind of theological discussion about resurrection and those kinds of things. Like what Martha needs in that moment, Jesus knows what it is because he knows her that well. So she brings this thing at him and he responds in a way that connects with her and how she's wired. Mary, on the other hand, in Luke 10, we know that Mary is much more relational. She was the one sitting at Jesus' feet, just soaking up everything he had to say. So when Mary says the same thing, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died, his response to her is not a theological discussion. She just needs someone to sit with her. And so he says, well, take me to where he's buried. And Jesus went and just wept with her because that's what she needed. I think that's like an expert friendship move. They both come at him with the same thing. His responses are different because they are two different people, and he knows them so well as their friend. He's like, I know what Martha needs. I know what Mary needs. And then Jesus also has needs. He needs to grieve Lazarus, his friend. And so he's also a friend to Lazarus because he raises him from the dead. Go read the story. It's amazing. In this story, though, we see a little bit of how, of like, love each other as I have loved you. We see it where it's like, oh, it's kind of based on how well we know each other. With the disciples, he loves them in really specific ways. Like, he calls them, each of their callings that we have record of is so unique to what we find out about their personalities and their vocations and all these really specific things that he develops them and he empowers them and he loves them by, he invites them into his life He's with them on that Thursday night. He washes their feet, even Judas's feet. He brings them to Gethsemane to pray with him in his darkest moment. He invites them into that. Like, we see all of these, like, as I have loved you kinds of moments. John sums it up by saying that Jesus was full of grace and full of truth. And when I think about that as the marker of friendship, like, if that is what we were to say, those are my friends, the people who are full of grace to me and also full of truth to me, both of those together. It's not really about who you watch the ball game with, right? It's deeper than that. It's much more beautiful than that and much more essential than that. And so Jesus gives this commandment to the 12, which we inherit as a part of the inheritance, that our job, our calling is to love one another as he has loved us, to be full of grace and truth with one another, whether that is the stranger at the grocery store or your neighbor that you've lived next to for so long or your spouse or your kids or whatever, whomever. Full of grace, full of truth. If we think about it in those ways, then friendship is very different, and we actually have a lot of friends. If you're thinking of it as giving and also receiving, it's the thing that we're learning how to do as fellow disciples. But that might be too vague. Like, as I have loved you, might be too vague. So what if we looked at the next few verses and maybe tried to identify some really specific ways that as I have loved you shows up? So look at verse 13. So I'm going to give you four kind of key ideas that are expressions of how as I have loved you shows up. Look at verse 13. Greater love is no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. Okay? Now again, we look at that primarily as in talking about him literally laying his life down and dying for our sins. Like him taking your sin, my sin, into his body and that sin killing him and him taking it to the grave. He says, you want to know what love looks like? It looks like that. You want to know who I do that for? I do that for my friends. It's beautiful and deep. And we as Christians, we look at that and we say, that was for me. He did that for my sin. He did that for our sin. He is the Savior of the world. We put our faith in that. And if that is not something that is familiar to you, like if that sounds foreign to you in some way or that makes you wonder about your own situation, then you're in the right place. Don't leave here today wondering. If we're thinking about it, not only in terms of his sacrificial death on the cross, if we're also thinking of it as a friendship thing, then one of the hallmarks, I think, of friendship would be self-sacrifice. Like, I think that's one of the things that we see in his life over and over and over again, is his willingness to lay down his life. We see it in the incarnation. Jesus being 100% God. And always has been 100% God, takes on 100% humanity. You guys remember the theological term, hypostatic union? I'm telling you, it's going to pay off one day. That his nature, there's a union of those two things, his humanity and his divinity. Philippians 2 says that he emptied himself. While remaining God, took on humanity, and having both of those 100% present in his body, he humbled himself by taking the form of a servant. Like, that is a self-sacrifice. It says that he did not consider his, like, divine status as something to hold tightly to. He was open-handed with that and humbled himself to come here, live in this place, and to take on flesh and bone like us and to wrestle the sin nature and the brokenness of humanity. He sacrificed. We see it throughout his ministry. We see that when he was interacting with Mary and Martha, he gave them space to grieve in their own ways. We see him wash the disciples' feet. We see him go into difficult territory to preach the truth to all people. We see him go against cultural norms, and him sharing table fellowship with women, which he would never do in that day, with the poor, which he would never do in that day. He completely turns the social status, not upside down, but he like levels it. There's so much self-sacrifice in that. When he was pressed, he didn't retaliate. That's self-sacrifice. He could have aspired to positions of power, but he said, no, I am not a leader. I'm a servant. There's so many examples. When we think about our friendships, like if self-sacrifice became like one of the things that we are now looking for to determine who our friends are, there are so many ways that this shows up in our lives. That your friends are the people who lay down their lives for you. And I bet maybe none of us in this room, maybe very few, will have a friend who has to, where that will mean actual death. But we lay down our lives for each other in many other ways, right? Like friends lay down, they like sacrifice time for each other. It's one of the things that's hard about friendships in adulthood is that time is this really precious commodity that we just don't seem to have a lot of. And yet friends will carve out time for each other and they'll sacrifice those things. Your friends will sacrifice money for you. Your friends are the ones where if you're in a bind and you're like, I'm not sure what to do, your friends are the ones who are like, can I give you some money? Your friends are the ones having you over for dinner and not sending you a Venmo request after for the, like you're part of it. They're like, no, I want to host you. Your friends are the ones who are, they're sharing of the things that they just know how to do. Your friends are the ones who you're like, I'm not sure how to fix my washing machine. And your buddy's like, I'll come over and fix your washing machine. Or I'll pull up YouTube, we'll figure it out together, you know? Like, people who are just, they're just willing to say no to some things so they can say yes to you about some things. But we also have to think of it the other direction. It's not just who's a friend to me, it's who am I a friend to. Like, you're a friend to the people that you are willing to hand over your time to, your money to, the things that you are good at, the things you're willing to help figure out, like, that's how it works. It's the self-sacrifice that happens in a friendship when it's like, hey, let's take time to meet and talk about this. Hey, let's get together for dinner, and I'm not going to talk about me the whole time. I'm going to actually ask about you as well. What if we took time to pray together about this? Like, those are friendships. Like, they are costly. And if we think about friendship in that term, unless I'm going to keep just saying like who you watch the ball game with, because to me that's like one of the examples. If it's not so much who do you get together to watch the ball game with or who do you vacation with, and it's more like how much sacrifice is happening in our connections, it reframes it a little bit. It changes it a little bit. It actually moves the bar higher, and I think it looks more like Jesus looks. Look at verse 14. Let's look at another one. Another way that as I have loved you can show up. He says, verse 14, you are my friends if I command you, if you do what I command you. Now, this seems a little weird at first, right? Basically, like, if I can boss you around, you're my friend. But really, he's talking about verse 12. The commandment in verse 14, he's referencing the commandment in verse 12. Like, you are my friends if you love one another like I loved you. Like, if you walk that out, we're in a friendship together. And so the word here is just going to be communion. Like, there is there's a common union in your friendships. That Jesus is the one who unites us. Like, Jesus' friendships are rooted in this common love for one another. I think we have to include that in how we're thinking about it. Like, in this sense, Jesus considers you to be a friend Like, he is already a friend to you. You're a friend to him when you're like walking out the things that he does. Like, when this is like a part of it, like, that's the common union that is there. And I was talking with someone about this week, and I've said this for a while. I think that we have to, if you think about your life and all the relationships in your life, and it's like a pie graph, right? There's probably a lot of what you experience that most humans can relate to. There's probably another part of that pie that's maybe like only people that live in Louisiana can understand, those kinds of things. As it keeps getting smaller, there's a certain extent where your closest friends can understand you. But there's one sliver of this pie. There's one like part of your life where you are like, no one understands this part of me. And I would argue that you're wrong. Like, Jesus understands that part. The part of you that you just can't explain to your spouse or to your closest friends. You can't find the words. You can't really even maybe understand it yourself. Jesus completely gets that part of you. Why? Because he is a friend to you. And so in that sense, there is, like, we're never alone, right? And if you take that and you kind of expand that and you look around this room, we are all friends if we are walking with the Lord. Like, that is the common union that we have. And so in his church, we're never alone. Like, you might feel lonely at times. You might want to like watch the ball game with people, which is great. Maybe you didn't get invited to it. That's a bummer. It doesn't mean that you're alone, though. It doesn't mean that you're unimportant. It doesn't mean any of the things that the worldly rubric tells us. We're connected to each other. Because your life is not going to swing based on if you watched a ball game with people or got to hang out or do this kind of thing. Your life is rooted in something that's bigger than yourself. And this common union that we have in our friendships, like that is what friendship is. Now, I'm not saying that if you are close with someone who's not a believer, that you're not friends. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you are absolutely friends with people who are believers. And so what if Jesus is helping us see friendship a little bit differently in terms of not social things or commonalities or certain ages and all this kind of stuff? What if we have a different lens where he's like, no, it's really a sacrifice that's a reflection of this common union that we have. So of course I'll sacrifice for you because you're my brother. You're my sister. Like the church, like where else can we go and find a bunch of siblings? Some of you come from biological families that are fantastic. And some of you come from biological families that are a complete disaster. Where else are you going to find a bunch of siblings, a bunch of parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents and kids to fill in the gap for you? It's here because of this common union that we have. And so if friendship is also a sibling kind of situation, it changes how we look at things. Look at verse 15. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I've called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I've made known to you. No longer servants, because a servant has, there's nothing being passed on to a servant. Jesus says, I've called you friends. Why? Because I'm relaying everything that the Father is telling me to tell you. Everything that the Father is doing, I'm aware of. I'm telling you all of it. I'm telling you all of it. Why? Because we are friends. And so I just put the word openness for this one. Like, Jesus is like, no, this is what friendship is. It's what the Father is doing is completely relevant to our friendship. So this like vertical sense of like me and the Father are doing this thing, it absolutely makes a difference horizontally to you. So I'm just going to pass all those things on. That there's this sense of direction and redirection where he's not holding back from us. Like, Jesus is like, I'm your friend because I'm helping you connect to what God is doing in the moment. And so for us, like, that has to be a part of friendship as well. Like, our friends are the ones who help us stay focused on the Lord and aware of his activity among us. I don't have space in life for people who won't do that for me, you know? That might sound a little bit harsh, but I don't want to sit around and talk about shallow things all the time. Like, who has time for that? Now, I'm not saying that if you're watching the ball game together at halftime, you have to have a devotional. I'm just saying, like, in fact, maybe don't be that person. However, when friends get together, if everyone at that table has that common union, you should almost have to intentionally not bring up God. And yet I'm afraid a lot of Christian friendships will spend time together and that never comes up. And what I would say is, I don't want you to take that means those people aren't your friends. I think you have to take it as, we're just not being good friends to each other. How can we be better friends to each other? Well, let's pass on what the Father is doing in us. What are you learning? What are you being stretched in? What's awesome? What are you celebrating that God is doing? What are you being convicted about? What do you think about this or this or this? Like, what is God doing in you? And just being ready to share all this openness and this disclosure. That's friendship. So again, don't cast out people who don't do that. Are you being a friend? Are you being the one who's willing to, like, get that part of the conversation going? There's too much just shallowness in our world and very surface level things. But among the people of God, we should be a friend like Jesus is a friend. I wonder if with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, like, he knew them so well. I wonder if that is because he would just share so much and they were like, oh, that's what we're doing? Oh, it's safe to say all this stuff? Maybe that's why Mary and Martha were both comfortable enough with Jesus to say, here's what's going on with me. I feel like you should have been here. Maybe that openness from the Father to share that, maybe that created a culture in their friendship where they knew, I can say this, and Jesus is not going to run away from me. He's not going to lash out at me. I just need to offload this. And he's going to meet me where I am because he's my friend. Because he sacrifices for me, and we have a common union, so that openness that we have, like, it's okay. You see it? It's making sense, I hope. Let's look at one more. Verse 16. Wait, let me say this too. I forgot this. This is my notes. It's too good. So Jesus was a friend in this way, in part, because he was so secure. Like, so secure in what God was doing and who God had made him and, like, all of that stuff. And he's passing this stuff on. He was secure, which meant that he knew what to expect from his friends in return. Like, when we are grounded and rooted, we're not putting pressure on our friends to do something they're not supposed to do. We're not asking them to play a role that God is supposed to play. We're just rooted in it. And I think that openness and Jesus sharing the Father this, the Father this, the Father this, it helped them understand, like, oh, the Father's doing stuff in our midst. And so we don't have to expect weird things from one another. We can just be very present with each other because we're anchored in something that's bigger than ourselves. And I believe that openness helps create a friendship culture that means that we are not in conflict all the time necessarily, and we're not doing all these kinds of other kinds of things because we're expecting the right things from each other. Because how many friendships have gone south because one or both are expecting all the wrong things from each other? And so I think that rootedness is really, really important. Now, verse 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. For this one, I just put the word champion. He's like, I want you to bear fruit. I want you to abide. I want you to be everything God made you to be. Friendship is like, that is what, that's such a huge part. Like, your friends are championing you to be the best you that you can be. I have no space for people who want to tear me down, insult me, like, and none of that kind of stuff. Like, I want the people who see me as like the new earth version of me, and they're like, whatever I need to do, I will sacrifice to help you become who you're supposed to be, because we have this common union, and so let's share everything that God is doing to build one another up, because that is who we are meant to be. That's what it means to be a, like, God's people. And so whether that happens occasionally in a friendship, or if it's with the people I hang out with the most, or anywhere in between, like, that, those are my friends. Those are your friends. Like, it's deeper than that. If we limit it to who you hang out with, we're missing out on how Jesus defines friendship. So the last verse, he says, these things I command you so that you'll love one another. And so I want to put those four things up on the screen to think about friendship in this way. Both in terms of you, like the people that are in your life, but also the way that you are a friend to others. The people that, like, when a friendship where they're sacrificing for one another, there's a common union of, like, the love for the Lord, that there's an openness, we're sharing what God is doing, and we are championing each other, and we're building each other up. It's so much better. It really is. And I know that what this does not do, this does not swoop in and just replace the fact that sometimes we're like, man, I'm lonely. It doesn't make friendships easier all of a sudden. I think there is a morphing that has to happen, that we have to recognize, like, oh, God really has put people in my life who do these things for me. And God has put people in my life that I do these things for them. And it may not always be reciprocated, but, like, this is the culture of friendship that we are called to. And so I think as we are considering the relationships around us, what I want to do is look at this and I want to be like, man, I want to be this way to the stranger and also to my very closest people. And I want to be thankful for the ways that others do these things for me. Whether it's my closest friends that I'm in contact with regularly, or just like the occasional person I just hear from every now and then, whatever it might be. I want to stop looking at friendship through a worldly lens and see it through how Jesus models it for us. And you know what? He is all of these things to you right now in this moment. He is sacrificing even now. He could be seated at the right hand of the Father and just kind of cruising, but he is interceding for you. He is caring about what you are going through and what I'm going through. He is leading his church faithfully. He is keeping us in constant contact with the Father. Like, he is the one who is keeping that love in place, and he is passing on everything that we need for life and godliness. He is constantly sending that to us through his Spirit, through creation, through his word, all through others, through all the ways that he wants to speak to us. And he is all about us being exactly who we were meant to be the whole time. And so what you and I have to do is we have to kind of really think about, okay, so Jesus' experience on the earth with his friends and his continual intercession of the church means that he is an absolute expert in how to help us deal with the fact that sometimes our friendships come up short, sometimes our connections are not what they need to be, but we all want them to be amazing. And he can lead us forward in that. And so where this fits into your life, only you know that. But I think it's one more way that Jesus' experiences on the earth are supposed to help us draw nearer to him, especially when we think about how he is to us. I think that's amazing. And so what we will do is we will do how we kind of normally respond here. We will sing. You may see people come here and pray. You may want to sit there, honestly, and kind of think through some of your struggles in this area of life. We have the Lord's table over to your right. But it could be that taking the body of Christ broken for you, the blood of Christ poured out for you, like into your body, will remind you that he has given you everything you need for life and godliness. That you really can be this kind of friend. He really is being this friend to you, and he will send people and has sent people to do this very thing. And so I don't know how God wants to use this morning, but we're just going to give him a few minutes to kind of let us respond before we dismiss. So let's stand together. Lord, I thank you that that even something as like practical as friendships, that you don't look at this as being insignificant or unspiritual. I'm reminded that we were created in the image of a community. We were created in the image of Father, Son, Spirit, and the love and unity that exists there. You have given us friendships in order to be a shadow of that reality. Like, we're here to imitate that, to replicate that, and to show the world around us this beautiful thing that you have done, where you've taken all these different people and you've made us into friends and family in a way that we could not forge on our own. And certainly, among us, there are some who are right in line with today and loved every second of it, and others are like, this is one of the hardest parts of my life right now. I'm grateful that you'll just meet us where we are. And so as we respond at your table or in song or in prayer or whatever it needs to look like for the next few minutes, you've already met us in the moment. Would you move us one step deeper? We thank you that you have lived out these verses for us. We see it in your scriptures. We see it in the way that you continue to bless and keep us. So as we respond in the next few minutes, would you just help us and give us the grace that we need? We love you. Thank you. Pray this in your name. Amen. So let's sing together as we respond this morning. We'll respond for a few minutes, and then we'll go.